This is Your Legal Rights, and this is our annual program to help you prepare your income tax return. Hopefully you're working on it, and April 15th is not quite 2 months away from us. I'm Chuck Finney. My guest is David Hellman, an attorney who's a specialist in both tax law and estate planning, trust, and probate law, certified by the Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar of California. He's also a certified public accountant. His offices are in Marin County. Funding for Your Legal Rights is made possible by the Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar of California, which certifies 11 fields of law: taxation law, appellate law, bankruptcy law, criminal law, estate planning, trust, and probate law, family law, franchise and distribution law, immigration and nationality law, workers' compensation law, legal malpractice law, and admiralty and maritime law. Additional funding is provided by the Family Law Section of the State Bar and the Lawyer Referral Service of the Bar Association of San Francisco. David, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Chuck.
You have been a terrific guest all these years. You have, I forget how many years you've done this.
It's been quite a few.
It's wonderful. Thank you very much for your time and your giving yourself to the public. David, let's do this. For those people who are listening to the program live, they will have the opportunity to call in and talk with you on the air, and I'll give that number in a few minutes. But with the financial situation as it is in this country, and certainly in this state, where jobs are scarce, people have lost jobs, they're doing whatever they can. A lot of people who have jobs are working at home. Other people who have lost jobs are trying to do some kind of work at home and using home offices. What are some of the things that people should know about if they're using some part of their home as an office?
Okay. Well, first of all, the area used has to be used exclusively for the home office. So you can't have a computer in there that you play games on part of the time and have a couch in there where people may sleep over or whatever, or part of the family room. It needs to be a part of the house, and it doesn't need to be a full room. It can just be an area in the house that is used exclusively for business. And what typically you are allowed by way of deduction, besides all of the normal things for office supplies and telephone — again, telephone would need to be used exclusively for the business, so probably having a separate line — using parts of the house, then what that entitles you to is to take that percentage that you are using for the office. So let's say that the square footage of the office is 100 square feet and you have 1,000 square feet in the space, so that would be a 10% amount. So you could then take 10% of the cost.
David, let me interrupt you for a moment. We're getting a lot of interference. I don't know what's happened, because you and I, prior to the program, were talking and there was no interference whatsoever. You're still on the same phone that we were talking with before I put you on?
Yes, I am.
You are?
So we'll try to see what we can do.
Okay. All right. Do you feel you want to stay on this phone?
Yes, let's leave us on.
Okay. Let's leave it on this one. Pardon me for interrupting, but it was getting pretty bad, but go ahead.
So what happens then is you're entitled to take that percentage of the costs of the home, whether it's an apartment or a residence that you own, or it's a house that you're renting. So if you're renting the place, then you'd get that percentage of the rent. You'd get that percentage of the utilities, that percentage of the maintenance, of the insurance. If you own the home, the property tax. If you own the home and are paying a mortgage, then that part of the mortgage interest. So all of the
not the mortgage principal.
Right, just the interest.
Okay.
Okay. Then you also, if you do own the property, have the choice of deciding whether you want to depreciate that part of the home and take a depreciation deduction. Downside for doing that is if you ever go to sell the home, then you're really selling two things: one, your personal residence, and second, an office. And the office portion is going to be taxable income. It's not going to get melded into the sale of the residence.
Oh, that's interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you end up selling two different pieces of property at that point, and your alternative would be then to do a 1031 exchange on the office portion into something else. Of course, maybe you then replace it into another resident a home office in it also.
Am I?
So it gets complicated, but there are deductions, and people should be aware that it's available to them. Again, the home office needs to be used exclusively for that purpose. If you are employed and have a home office, then the home office needs to be for the convenience of your employer. And if you're...
Not for the convenience of you.
Right. It needs to be for the convenience of the employer, so you want to get a letter from the employer saying that they want you to have a home office for their business purposes. And if you're someone who, for instance, doctors frequently have home offices because they, let's say they're a hospital physician, they may not have any space where they can either see patients outside the hospital or, for instance, do billing.
Mm-hmm.
So they would have a reason to have an office, even though they don't necessarily have an employer, but and may have another primary place where they work. And a lot of people find themselves in that position also.
David, let me ask you this. I think it, certainly in talking with you about your practice, which is not necessarily unique to people who are doing other persons' tax returns, you told me that of your clientele, about 50% of them come to you saying, I'm not ready to give you all the documentation for my tax return so I can file the return by April 15th. And you said that about 50% of your clients request extensions. What's the downside of that, if any?
Well, there is no real downside. You are obligated to pay what you estimate you will owe on April 15th when you file the extension. And you also are obligated to, if you file estimated tax payments instead of having withholding covering all of your liability, then you're also obligated to continue making estimated payments for the current tax year moving forward until you actually do your return and have a better sense of what the estimate should be. But you need to project what your estimated income will be and pay tax on that for the current year also.
If you're going to try to stay out of having trouble, getting into trouble with the IRS, I presume in a situation like this where you're going to ask for an extension, you need a professional to help you, a CPA or a tax attorney, et cetera, or am I going too far on that?
Well, maybe going a little too far because the tax software that people use frequently do have those forms in them. And if you know what you're doing, which of course is a premise for everything that you try to do yourself, then you probably can do it. Now, the extension is automatic.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't have to wait for the IRS to respond, but you are supposed to pay.
Yeah.
And California takes the position on extensions that if you don't pay in within 90% of what you're going to owe, then they will not grant the extension when you actually go file, and they'll treat it as a late return.
Oh, really? And what do they do to you there?
Penalize you.
Yeah. Oh, my. Oh, my. Okay. I think what we're going to do, we're going to take a brief break, David. I'm going to give the phone number where people can call in and talk with you on the air, and I'm also going to give the phone number for the CPAs who are here for the Call a CPA night, our annual thing. So we're going to call you right back because of the interference on the line, and hopefully that it will make things better, okay?
Very good.
I'll call you right back.
All right.
All right. Here's the situation. We have 7 CPAs here, and they are ready, willing, and able to talk with you. And one of them, who is Miguel, speaks Spanish as well as English. So if feel more comfortable in speaking Spanish to a CPA, certainly do so. The number for Call a CPA Night is 1-800-525-9917. That's 1-800-525-9917. And we have a number of people, Frank Adam, who's also an attorney, Laura Ross, Hannah Loyola, Michelle Day, Miguel Palma, both English and Spanish, Patrick Duffy, and Jamie Tan. And if you'd like to talk with David Hellman on the program, on the air, that number, 1-415-841-4134. 1-415-841-4134. All right, David, are you still there?
Yes, I am.
Good. Okay. Hopefully, we've gotten the gremlin and interference out of the way. I've given people the phone number to call and speak to you on the program if they like. And also, since this is our annual Call a CPA night, I've given them that number also. One of the things that has been a real problem for a significant percentage of people is they've been faced with foreclosures. Maybe they've gone through short sales. I wonder if you would talk about some of the tax consequences involving short sales and what that essentially means, because usually, as I understand it, and you correct me if I'm wrong, what I understand is frequently it's a situation where people's personal homes have gone value-wise below the value or below the amount owing on the mortgage, and they're finding it very difficult because of maybe having lost a job or whatever to be able to continue to pay the mortgage, and then they're confronted with what's called a short sale. Would you mind defining that briefly and then give us an example of how this may affect them tax-wise?
Sure. When people go through a short sale, you're really looking at two different taxable events and potentially have tax liability. One of them is cancellation of debt income, and the second one is you have a sale transaction and you need to report gain or loss. If there is a gain, then you would pay tax on that potentially. So what happens, by way of an example, now, and the Internal Revenue Service recently came out in last September with an opinion that says because California changed their law to say that lenders cannot go after borrowers for any deficiency on a short sale once the lender has approved the short sale amount, that essentially what has happened is that the loan has become non-recourse at that point. And if you have a non-recourse loan, then you do not have cancellation of indebtedness income. So that takes away that one element.
Mm-hmm.
But you still have a sale. So what they said, is that the sale price, instead of being what the actual escrow would be, it's going to be the amount of debt that was on the property that includes what got portion that got paid back as well as the portion that was forgiven. So by way of an example, if you buy a home for $400,000, you have a $300,000 mortgage on the property, and the property is worth $250,000 and is sold for the $250,000. Well, assuming that we're not dealing with closing costs or anything like that, but just those base numbers, the lender has paid back $250,000, and there's a shortfall of $50,000 in paying the mortgage. So the IRS is saying, well, that $50,000 is not going to be cancellation of debtedness income, but it is going to be part of the sale price of the property. So for your tax purposes, you would treat the property as if you'd sold it for $300,000. Now, for a personal residence, you cannot take a loss on the sale but only recognize gain. Here, you paid $400,000, you were deemed to have received $300,000, so there's no gain there. And so by way of this example, there's no income to the person, although you'd need to report these items on your tax return so that it was clear what had happened.
What about the $100,000 difference? Is there any tax consequence for with regard to the short sale there?
No.
None?
No,
okay.
You lose that $100,000 okay. of your equity, and you don't get a deduction.
I see. All right. Okay. Well, this is... I think this is somewhat of an improvement for people because my understanding was previously, until obviously California put in this new law, people would be taxed. The non-payment of the amount that was supposedly forgiven of the mortgage would be considered income, would it not, previously?
It would, and you'd have to look to see whether there was an exemption in the law for it. Federal had an exemption. Mm-hmm. California used to, but it no longer has it for 2013. So, yes, there are things, and there are other possible exemptions. For instance, if the person was insolvent at the time of the sale, then you would be entitled to exclude the portion of the debt mm-hmm. that would be reflected to the extent of your insolvency. So there are a lot of potential issues there.
Briefly, what's the definition of insolvency?
If your liability, to the extent your liabilities exceed your assets, and it's all liabilities, and including the mortgage that is due on the property that's being sold, mm-hmm. and all of your assets, including funds and retirement plans and everything else. So you essentially create a balance sheet as of the day of the sale and compare the assets to the liabilities. To the extent the liabilities exceed the assets, then that amount is your insolvency, and that amount is excludable from the cancellation of indebtedness income.
Okay. What about medical expenses? Is there? I understand there's some kind of a change that has become effective if you are under age 65 as of, I think, the 2013 return. Can you talk about that a bit?
Yes. What has happened is that as part of all these tax changes that went into effect, the federal government adopted back at the beginning of the year, 2013, they increased the amount of floor that your medical deductions must exceed before you actually get a deduction. So for people under 65, that floor was increased from 7.5% of the adjusted gross income number, which is the number at the bottom of the first page of a Form 1040, where you'd be itemizing deductions that would show on the second page. But if you are 65 or older, they left it at 7.5%. Now, that 7.5% is phasing out by 2016, in which case everybody will then be subject to the 10%.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have income of $100,000, your adjusted gross income at the end of the year is $100,000, that's the bottom of page one of the return, then 10% of that would be $10,000, so only medical expenses in excess of that $10,000 would be itemizable deductions on Schedule A.
So in excess of $10,000 would be, you could itemize those medical expenses.
Correct.
So in other words, it's gone from that same example of $100,000 adjusted gross income. Previously, it was 7.5%. And so that would have been $7,500, over $7,500. So that's the difference of another $2,500.
That's correct.
Okay, all right.
It can be a big chunk of money.
It is for a good number of people, obviously.
Right.
What about with people who are let's say, doing their own business or have their own business or trying to work out of their home or perhaps are required to use their own automobile and not being reimbursed by their employer? What's the auto mileage situation with regard to the tax consequence there?
Okay. So what happens is that you're entitled to take the greater of your actual expenses for the portion of the automobile use that is business or the mileage deduction. So for 2013, that amount is 56.5 cents per mile. For 2014, it actually reduced down 0.5 cent, so it's 56 cents per mile.
Mm-hmm.
The IRS calculates this every year based on the cost of gas, the cost of maintenance of the car, all those factors that are involved in running an automobile.
But I understand if you're going to be able to justify this, if for example, you may face an audit, you have to keep pretty good records on this, don't you?
Right. You need to keep an auto log of mm-hmm. the amount of mileage, where you went, for what purpose, date, beginning mileage, ending mileage.
Not going to the supermarket.
Right. It has to be for business.
Okay. All right. What about charitable deductions? Anything in that area? But let me do this, David, if you don't mind. Hold on a minute. What I want to do is I want to give our phone number for the program as well as for Call a CPA Night. I'll be right back with you.
Okay.
All right. This is our Call a CPA Night. We do this once a year, and we have seven CPAs with us who are here willing and able to talk with you. It's a great public service that they're performing. Several of them have done this for a number of years in conjunction with my program, Your Legal Rights. The number is 1-800-525-9917, 1-800-525-9917. If you feel more comfortable speaking in Spanish with respect to a call of CPA night, ask for Miguel Palma, who speaks both English and Spanish. He's very ready, willing, and able to talk with you. So again, 1-800-525-9917. If you want to talk with David Hillman on the program, it's 1-415-841-4134. 1-415-841-4134. This is Your Legal Rights. This is our annual helping you to prepare your income tax return. We're focusing now on the year 2013. If you haven't done a tax return for 2012 or 2011, you may have some questions, and you're welcome to call in and ask them. My name is Chuck Finney. This is Your Legal Rights. My guest is David Hillman, who's done this so graciously for many, many years. He's a certified specialist in tax law as well as estate planning, certified by the Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar. He's also a CPA. His offices are in Marin County. And, David, let me get you to talk a little bit about some other issues here to try to get people acclimated to what's going on. If someone, and I doubt that too many of the members of the audience are in this bracket, but if someone has some assets overseas, maybe has inherited something and it's somewhere overseas, or maybe has a bank account in some other country, or perhaps inherited some property in some other country, what's the consequence there?
All right. Well, the United States government requires that you report that. Now, for any income you have overseas, whether you bring it into the United States or not, you are responsible for reporting it. So if you have this bank account and it's earning interest, then you're responsible for reporting that interest on your United States return. If you have over $10,000 in a bank account or securities account overseas, there is a form that you file every year with the Treasury Department. There's a mailing address in Detroit for that. It does not go in specifically with your income tax return. If you have substantial assets, property assets or security investments overseas, and that generally is going to be over $50,000, then there's a different form that you file with your income tax return, and you need to report those assets, and you also, of course, have to report any income from them. And the tax law is very draconian if you don't report this, and you can be penalized up to half of what's in that account.
Wow.
So it's a big number, and it's something that you need to be able to deal with.
I hear the phone ringing. Is that in your office?
Yeah, that's in my office. Unfortunately, I'm at the place where it's ringing, but it'll stop soon.
Yes, I hope so. Okay, very good. We're trying to do as best we can with the electronics that we're confronted with. Let me see. We're going to have someone call you or talk with you on the air in just a minute. But here's a question that I have from one of the listeners. If I inherited some money, would it be subject to federal or California state income tax?
The inheritance, well, it depends. The fact of receiving it is not taxable as income. However, if you receive a retirement plan account,
mm-hmm.
Or you receive an installment note that the decedent was collecting, then those items are going to generate taxable income for you. So, for instance, on the retirement account, if you got the proceeds from that retirement account, then that would be taxable income to you. But if it was rolled over into an inherited IRA, then you would only be paying tax on that inherited IRA as you drew the funds out.
But in other words, what you are saying, and correct me if I'm wrong on this, what you're saying is if you inherited a retirement plan account, you can, and it's not an IRA, the person who inherits it, cannot turn around and try to transfer that retirement plan account that you've inherited into an IRA. Is that right?
No, you actually can try.
Oh.
And it's generally, you can roll those over into IRA accounts.
So you've got to do some planning and be careful.
Yes, you do, and there's timing restrictions on it also.
Okay. All right.
So you need to consult a professional here, and sometimes the custodian of the accounts or the holder of it will give you appropriate advice, but there are time deadlines that you need to follow and make sure that it's all done properly, and generally you want to have a trustee-to-trustee or a custodian-to-custodian transfer so the money mm-hmm. doesn't go through the person, and then it gets reported appropriately on a 1099-R form, mm-hmm. and you don't end up with a tax problem on your own income tax return.
So what you're saying, if I may, is that if you inherit this retirement plan account, and you what you don't want to do is put that into your own account, you want to get some tax planning and make sure it's transferred to an IRA.
Correct. You want to roll it over into an inherited IRA.
Okay. All right. Let's talk a bit, if you would, we're getting to the end of the statewide version of the program. And for those of you who listen to us live, we will go another half hour in the Bay Area as well as on the Internet at www.kalw.org. But could you talk a little bit about Social Security tax issues? What are people missing on this one, if at all?
Well, some people are surprised to find that their Social Security income is taxable to them in some circumstances. It depends on whether you're married or single, but there is a base amount. So if your income, and it includes your regular income, less social, part of your Social Security, they take half of your Social Security, add it to your base income, and they add other things like tax-exempt interest and certain items that are otherwise deducted from your taxes. But if that, as a married couple, exceeds $32,000, then you pay that portion of your Social Security income that exceeds the $32,000 is taxable, or there's another formula that comes in, but you need to be aware that it does happen. If you're married filing separately, there is no exclusion, and all of the Social Security is taxable. If you're any other form of taxpayer, such as single or head of household or qualified widower or some other category, then you'd have a $25,000 exclusion amount.
Mm-hmm. What is is there a specific tax bracket with respect to Social Security that may be taxable, or does that fall within whatever bracket you're in to begin with?
Right. It just adds to your other income.
Oh, okay.
So you fall into whatever
gotcha.
Tax bracket you're at.
Gotcha. Okay. Let me see if there's anything else here. Oh, charitable deductions. What's the situation there? We have about 1 minute left.
There's really been no change, but what you want to do is make sure you pick up everything. If you've donated over $250,000, excuse me.
Not too many of us can do $250,000.
But $250, then you need to have a written acknowledgement from the charity about the donation, which would state how much you gave and the date that you gave it, and whether or not there was any benefit received from it directly coming back. So when you have all those things as your backup, then you go ahead and be sure you claim all that if you can itemize your deduction. I mean, this only works if you itemize your deductions.
Okay, and that's on a 1040, is it not?
Yes.
Okay, not the 1040 EZ, which is the one that where you don't itemize.
Correct.
All right. I think at this point we've come to the end of the statewide version of the program. We will continue live in the Bay Area. We'll continue on the Internet. It is about 7:29 at 91.7, your local public radio station, KLW in San Francisco. This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. We're doing our annual Helping You Prepare Your 2013 Income Tax Return program. We also have a Call a CPA night, which we do every year. And let me tell you who we have here. And by the way, that number is 1-800-525-9917. 1-800-525-9917. These CPAs who are here with us, some of have done this for a number of years in conjunction with my program. They're doing this as a very positive and beneficial service to you if you have tax questions. So don't be afraid to call in and ask these people questions. For those of you who may feel more comfortable in speaking with one of the CPAs in Spanish, Miguel Palma It speaks both English and Spanish, so ask for him. Here are the other persons who are with us for CPA night. Frank Adam, who is also an attorney. Laura Ross, Hannah Loyola, Michelle Day, Patrick Duffy, and Jamie Tan. And again, that number, 1-800-525-9917. If you would like to talk with David Hellman and me on the air, it's 1-415-841-4134. 1-415-841-4134. And those of you who are listening to us on the internet at www.klw.org, that 1-415-841-4134 also works for you if you want to speak on the air. But the 800 number, 1-800-525-9917, you can use also for Call a CPA night. All right. Let's do this. We have right now, Sam, welcome to your legal rights.
Hi.
Go ahead. You're Sam?
Yes.
I didn't expect to hear a woman's voice, but go ahead, Sam.
So my son won an arbitration against Kaiser for a considerable amount of money, and we are wondering if he has to pay taxes on it.
He won an arbitration against whom?
Kaiser.
What is that?
Kaiser Hospitals.
Oh, I see. Okay. All right. Okay. Against Heiser. Okay. But this was for what? Personal injuries?
Yes.
Okay. So this was he was represented by an attorney, I presume, and you believe, you understand that his winning here is to compensate him for personal injuries or medical malpractice. Is that right?
Pain and suffering.
Yeah, pain and suffering. Okay. David, what comments do you have for Sam on this?
Well, generally that is correct, that if you do receive compensation for a personal injury where there actually was an injury, and it's for that, then it is not taxable. If it's just emotional distress, that is taxable income.
Mm.
If it's somewhat compensating you for lost income, then that part would be taxable. So you need to get advice from a professional as to whether or not the whole amount is excludable or part of it may be taxable.
That sounds great. I mean, a large part of it was pain and suffering.
Okay. Well, he needs those, Sam, really to deal with a professional on this to make sure that there's not a problem.
Thank you so much.
It's worth the investment. You're very welcome. And by the way, for if you're interested in finding out who your certified specialist may be in your area, wherever you may be in the state of California, you can either call, and this is both for taxation law and any one of the other 11 specialties. The statewide number is 415-538-2100, 415-538-2100. And if you want to go to the internet and find out geographically who the certified specialist may be in your area, you can go to the State Bar website, which is www.calbar.ca.gov. calbar.ca.gov, and just go to legal specialists on the left side of your screen, and you can plug in what community you are in, what city you're in, and it will tell you who the certified specialists are in the particular area that you might be interested in doing. And also, for those of you who may want to find someone through the lawyer referral service, every county has a bar association and lawyer referral service. And support for KLW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you have a legal problem, you may need to talk to a lawyer. The San Francisco Bar Association's Lawyer Referral Service can arrange an appointment for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. And for a referral to a lawyer, you can call 415-989-1616. That's 415-989-1616. If you're in San Mateo County, the San Mateo County Bar Association also has a lawyer referral service. You can call your own, of course, during normal business hours, 650-369-4149, 650-369-4149. If you're in any other county in California, as I said just a minute or so ago, every county has a Bar Association lawyer referral service. You can call your own. Tell them what the problem is. They'll do their best in finding someone who's experienced for you, set you up for a half an hour consultation with the attorney, and depending on the county, For half an hour, it may run $25, maybe $35. It's a wonderful service for the public, so I highly recommend it if you're interested. All right, my guest is David Hillman, a certified specialist in tax law and estate planning, and I think we have Carlos. Are you there?
Yes, hi. Can you hear me?
Welcome to. Oh, sure can, Carlos. Welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Thank you for the show and in advance. I have a question. I sold my primary residence last year, and I've had it for about 10 years, but I did extensive remodeling work to it. And my concern is relative to capital gains, and I am wondering if the exclusion, Section 121, pertains to this relative to capital gains.
Yes, the way that would be calculated is that you would take the net sale price, so it would be the price you sold it for less the closing costs like the commission and the escrow fees. You would then deduct what you paid for the property. You would also deduct the improvements that you made. If you had taken any depreciation on the property, either because you had rented it out or because you had a home office that you may have then abandoned because you can't have used it recently and get away with splitting the escrow.
I had no depreciations.
Okay. So at any rate, that number will give you essentially what is the taxable portion, and then you're entitled to the 121 exclusion. And if you haven't rented
what does
it out,
that mean for the rest of us, if you would, David, what does the 121 exclusion mean?
Right. Okay, so the 121 exclusion is that if you are a single person and you've owned and lived in the property for 2 out of the last 5 years, unless you acquired it through a 1031 exchange, but if you just bought it straight out, then you're entitled as a single person to a $250,000 exclusion from the gain before you pay any tax. If you're a married couple and you've both lived in the property for 2 out of the last 5 years and at least one of you have owned it for 2 out of 5 years, then you're entitled to a $500,000 exclusion from the gain.
So have you seen an attorney, Carlos?
No, I haven't.
Have you seen a CPA?
No, I haven't.
And when did you sell it? When was the sale date? When did escrow close?
It closed in, I want to say, March.
Of last year.
Yes, correct.
Okay. Well, if you have, it sounds to me that this would be something that you would want to certainly see a professional on and make sure you are not going to, let's say, get in trouble with the IRS.
I agree, and I think your professional there is kind of honing me into the ballpark anyway, and I just try to hit towards the infield. So that's great.
Okay, you're obviously a lover of baseball.
I manage a little baseball.
Oh, do you? Okay, Carlos, thanks very much for calling.
And thank you very much for showing your time and your help. I appreciate it. You've been a great help.
Very nice to have you call us. This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. My guest is David Hillman, a specialist in both tax law and estate planning. He's a CPA. His offices are in Marin County. You're welcome to call in and speak with him on the air if you like, with me also. It's 1-415-841-4134. 1-415-841-4134. This is our annual Call a CPA night. We have 7 CPAs here, one of whom is also an attorney. That's Frank Adam, who is also a tax attorney as well as being a CPA. And that number, 1-800-525-9917. 1-800-525-9917. Again, this is a public service that the CPAs are performing. The same with David Hillman. These people are giving their time to try to be of assistance to you. The CPAs are doing this because this is part of what they feel is important in serving the public. David Hillman is doing this because he feels it's important that he serve the public by making himself available, and he has been incredibly generous. How many years have we been doing this, David?
Well over 10, I think.
No, I think it's right. I think you're absolutely right. So I thank you for your generosity of time, and you have a very well-going business in Marin County, and you've been very generous with your time, and I thank you for that. Let me also mention something to those of you who may be facing problems as a renter. if you're a homeowner trying to hang on to your home, or maybe you're being overwhelmed by debt collection people, there's going to be a free workshop this Saturday, which is February 22nd, where you can learn from nonprofit attorneys who are experts on these issues I've just mentioned, and also there would be HUD, HUD Certified Housing and Credit Counselors there. Saturday, February 22nd, from 10:30 to 12:30 p.m. It's the East Palo Alto City Hall at 2415 University Avenue. And what you might want to do if you want to find out more about this is I'm going to give you a phone number if you want to jot this down, and you can call them tomorrow if you wish. It's the Housing and Economic Rights Advocates. I had a representative on the office on my program a couple of weeks ago from HERA. And that number to call to get more information about the free workshop, which will be Saturday, February 22nd, is 510-271-8443, extension 307. 510-271-8443, extension 307. For this special free workshop, if you're interested. All right, let's see if we do have... Okay, Jim, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hi, thanks. I married my same-sex partner in 2008. Can I retroactively refile my federal returns as a joint couple?
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, you can go back for part of the years. There's generally 3 years that you can go back. You could also do that for California, depending on what you'd done in California, how you'd reported things. But
I've always done separate, but I think there'd be a lot of gain, perhaps, in going back and retroactively doing the joint return.
Right. I would suggest that you get a professional to help, because it's complicated in putting it together. You need to take both returns of what were filed and then put them together, and it's not a simple process.
I know it isn't, and I will get a professional. Thank you.
Yeah, okay. Anything else, Jim?
No, that's it.
Okay, good. Thank you very much for calling. All right, again, our number, if you'd like to talk to David Hellman on the air, 1-415-841-4134 for the Call a CPA night, your opportunity to talk with a CPA off the air for about a remaining 16 minutes. Don't wait until the last minute. If you have a tax question and you want to talk to a CPA off the air, it's 1-800-525-9917. 1-800-525-9917. Again, if you feel more comfortable in calling and speaking in Spanish, Miguel Palma speaks Spanish as well as English. You would ask for him. My other guests here, who, when I say guests, they are the guest CPAs, members of the California Society of CPAs, are Frank Adam, who's also an attorney, Laura Ross, Hannah Loyola, Michelle Day, Patrick Duffy, and Jamie Tan, and I thank them for being so generous with their time. Patrick Duffy, Hannah Loyola, Laura Ross, and Frank Adam have done this over several years, so they've been very generous with their time. So I think if you have any questions that you want to ask David Hellman on the air, you're invited to call in and ask a question. What have we missed that you feel, David, we should talk about before the end of the program?
Well, one of the issues, and I'm not sure how much people are aware of the change in the tax brackets for upper-income people. Now, it may not impact people directly, but they may just have some interest in it to understand what happened when Congress and also our state legislature changed the law. So I was going to briefly go over the new top tax brackets so that people would be aware of them.
If you would briefly, that would
sure.
be great, David.
Okay, so for the prior 10 or 11 years, we were operating with a maximum federal tax rate of 35%. And what the changes that went into effect for 2013 for federal purposes, if you're a single person and your taxable income is over $400,000, then that top bracket went to 39.6%.
Mm-hmm.
For married filing separate, that number is $225,000, where the bracket's 39.6. For a married filing joint, it's $450,000, and an unmarried head of household, it's $425,000. So those, and there's also changes for capital gains income, if your income exceeds $250,000, then the amount of capital gains income would go, instead of being 15%, would go to 20%.
So of the other categories other than capital gains, the different examples you gave, would the maximum go up? I think for some of them it was 39% taxable, and I think there was, 39.5% taxable on one of them.
They're all 39.6.
Oh, pardon me, all 39.6 is the maximum. And now under capital gains, you're saying that the maximum is what?
20% federal.
20% federal. And it has been what before that?
15%.
15. Oh, I see.
All right, so
okay.
Depending on your bracket, if you're a lower income person, it would be 15. And actually, if you're a really low income bracket, it may be zero.
Really? Okay.
So it depends. Now, California also increased their tax brackets. So for taxpayers that have, and let's start with the single or married filing separate and fiduciary returns. So what our bracket had been 9.3% as a top bracket, and that has then increased. If your income is over $254,250, it went to 10.3.
Mm-hmm.
For $305,100, it went to 11.3, and for $508,500, it went to 12.3. And then, of course, everybody whose income is over $1 million pays an extra 1% that goes into the medical fund. And there are similar changes for unmarried heads of household and married couples. Married couples, the 10.3 starts at $508,500, and the 12.3 is at $1,017,000. So these have all gone in, and that was part of what we approved when we had a vote on this issue a year and a half ago, and approved that.
In California.
In California,
yeah.
Right.
Let me take another call. I believe in please, I hope I pronounce your name correctly. Anjani?
Yes, this is Anjani.
Yeah, go ahead. You're on the air.
Okay, thank you. I have a tax situation where I think I'm falling into the federal AMT bracket, and the main reason being that I paid a lot in California state tax. That was because of some mistake that I did. But I'm getting a lot of the state tax that I paid in refunds. Is there some way that I can avoid AMT because of that?
Is there some way? I'm sorry, I didn't get that. Is there some way? What, please?
I can avoid the AMT federal tax.
The alternative minimum tax. Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, well, what happens for the alternate minimum tax? Your tax is calculated two ways, and it really varies depending on taxpayers. And generally, if your income is over $100,000, $120,000, then you start AMT may be applicable, although it could be at a lower bracket too, depending on your deductions. But what happens for purposes of calculating the alternate minimum tax, you start with the regular income tax, and your regular income, you add back the exemptions, you add back all of the taxes that were deducted, so that would be your state income tax as well as the property tax on your home or your vehicle license fees. Those kind of taxes get added back in. They also add back your miscellaneous itemized deductions. And if you have certain kinds of investments, there are other things that add back, but those two are the primary ones. They then total up your income, having added that back, and depending upon how much it is, you're entitled to an exclusion from it, and then and that exclusion varies, but then they, again, depending on how much the income is, you're either taxed at a 26% bracket or a 28% flat bracket, and you compare those calculations against the regular tax. And if the alternate minimum tax is higher, then you are taxed at that higher amount.
This certainly, David, this certainly sounds like something that one, if someone is not either a CPA or a tax attorney, you want a professional to help you.
Well, you do, although if you are using tax software and you're doing your own return, the computer software generally will deal with this.
Wow.
It's fairly accurate.
That's terrific.
So you may not need that kind of help there. But if you have any questions or there are particular peculiarities, and or maybe you have one of these investments where something may or may not fall within the category, then clearly you should get professional help.
Good luck to you, Anjani.
Okay, thank you.
Yours was the most complicated question, obviously. Thanks very much for calling. All right, our number, we have a few minutes left with David Hellman on the air, 1-415-841-4134. It's also our annual Call a CPA night with our seven CPAs and one CPA attorney. That's 1-800-525-9917, 1-800-525-9917. And you might ask, why are we doing this program this month as opposed to maybe next month? Basically, next month becomes a much more complicated tax period, preparation period for CPAs and tax attorneys. And based upon requests that I have been given by people who have been involved with this, that's why we chose to do this in February as opposed to next month, which we've done in the past. Okay, Basso, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Okay. I would like just to ask about someone who, like, tried to fill online and make some mistake. Can he fix it? I need to see a professional for that.
What kind of a mistake was it, Basso?
I tried to fill, it's my first time to fill my W-2 form online, and I thought I make many mistakes.
Oh.
Because at the end, they show me a month. I don't think it's correct. I think I did a mistake.
For your 2012 return or what?
W-2 form.
The W-2 form.
Yes.
Did you file a 2013 return online?
Yes.
Oh, you
okay,
have.
So if you made a mistake, you can file an amended return. You have to do that with a paper return because the electronic filing won't accept amended returns yet.
Please don't interrupt David, because I want him to get this to you. Go ahead, David, please.
Yeah, so if you, I would say you can file a paper amended return. It's a form, for federal, it's form 1040X. For California, it's a form 540X. Probably a good idea to go to a professional and have them help you with that to make sure that the numbers do get in there correctly. And then if you've overpaid or the amount that was shown on the original return is incorrect, then you can file the amended return, and that will correct the issue.
Okay.
Does that help you somewhat?
Thank you. But can I have a contact of professional, like phone number or some kind of...
Well, here's what I would suggest that you might want to do. I don't have in front of me the phone number for the, and maybe I can get it before the end of the program, the California Society of CPAs, the San Francisco office. Maybe, Martin, you can get that if you would. But if you want to perhaps see a certified specialist in taxation, an attorney, you can call the Board of Legal Specialization and ask them who the certified specialists in taxation law are, and that's 415-538-2100, or you can go to the internet at www.calbar.ca.gov and go to the left side of your screen to legal specialists and look up taxation law, taxation specialty, and that will, and the area where you are, geographic area, and it'll tell you who the certified specialists are. I think that before the end of the program, maybe Martin can find for me the Society of CPAs. I think what you might want to do, Basso, you obviously have not had any help by a professional at all, is that right?
Yes.
Okay, where do you live?
San Francisco.
Yeah. Okay. I think if you wanted to, you certainly could look at the internet for certified public accountants, and you could find out who these people are. You can, if you go to the internet, you have access to the internet.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. If you go and you Google California Society of CPAs, San Francisco office. I think you'll find that you can find out from them who the CPAs are that you might want to contact. Good luck to you.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Yeah, good luck. Yeah, do that tomorrow. Do that tomorrow, and hopefully it'll help you. All right, we have Gary. Welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hi. I've been an executor for my mother's estate. She died 3 years ago, so I know I have to file her final tax return. The year that she died, I filed, an extension. But I haven't done anything and about filing her final return. And just this December, I finally cleared away the last of her accounts and everything. So I'm not quite sure. Have I violated any laws big time? Do I need to get legal advice before I go ahead? Or can I just, would a CPA person be able to help me deal with this final return?
All right, well, you've got two different tax obligations that you need to file returns for, and they are late. Your mother's final personal return should have been filed for the year, just like any other person's. So if she died 3 years ago, then you would have had to file a return for that year.
Right.
And then also the estate is a separate taxable entity, and it should be filing its own fiduciary income tax return, both federal and California, and those returns are due the same time as individual returns, so they're April 15th each year, unless you're for an estate, you could use a fiscal year, and again, there you're going to need some help, potentially, and I would say a CPA could help you here. You don't, it's a late filed return, and if you owe money, there will be some penalties and interest, but if you don't owe money, then there won't be any. You do have to watch out, though, because if you have a refund due you and you file beyond 3 years after when the return was due, then you'll lose the refund under federal law.
You better, I think what you better do, Gary, is you better see a professional.
Right.
All right.
Okay.
I'll do that right away then. Thank you.
Thank you very much for calling, Gary. We have probably 2 minutes left for the Call a CPA night, 1-800-525-9917, 1-800-525-9917. David, I think we've come to the end of our program.
Well,
I want to thank you very much.
Well, I've enjoyed it.
Well, I have too, and I thank you for your generosity in doing this on this segment of Your Legal Rights and all the previous years you've done it, and I wish you a very happy tax season, David.
Oh, thanks, Chuck.
take care of yourself. All David right. Hellman is a specialist in both tax law, estate planning, trust, and probate law. He's a CPA. He's certified by the Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar. His offices are in Marin County. Your Legal Rights production staff members are program engineer Joanne Marr and production assistant Martin McLean. Funding for Your Legal Rights is made possible by the Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar of California. Additional funding is provided by the Trust and Estate section of the State Bar, by the Labor and Employment Law section of the State Bar, the Lawyer Referral Service of the Bar Association of San Francisco, the California Applicants Attorneys Association, and the San Mateo County Bar Association. Next week, we are doing our Call a Lawyer night. Everybody, in case you're interested. And my guest, the topic on the air is landlord-tenant laws and issues. And my guests will be landlord-tenant attorneys James Coy Driscoll and Mark Seidenfeld. So I hope you join us for both landlord-tenant laws and issues and Call a Lawyer Night. Thank you very much for listening to Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. Uh-huh.